Welcome to Create Shift with me, Ellen Franklin Carr. I am a holistic and trauma-sensitive coach for creatives and artists. And on this podcast, we have conversations at the intersection of creative and artistic practice, holistic well-being, and entrepreneurship. I believe in artists making heart-led work that feels true to them. And I believe that this kind of work has the power to create positive change in individuals and society. But I believe that can only happen when those who make the creative work are nourished, supported, and able to thrive. Thank you for being here. If you are new here, welcome. And if you're returning, thank you so very much for coming back. I hope that you enjoy this episode. And as always, stay curious, stay inspired, and stay connected. Hello. It has been a minute since I recorded an episode of the podcast. And it's been an even longer minute since I did an interview episode. This podcast has been with me for a long time. Like, I'm shocked how many years I've been doing it, to be honest. And it has flowed and shifted with every iteration of my business. So I've done a lot of interviews in the past, and I really love doing them. But I haven't done any interviews for this new iteration of my work and the podcast with this focus on artists and creativity. So I'm really thrilled to be bringing interviews back and very excited to introduce my guest to you today, who is writer Tutku Barbaros. And so excited that Tuts could be the first interview that I'm bringing onto this iteration of the podcast. Tuts and I went to university together many, many years ago now, and I have followed her work online, you know, kind of as you do, sort of known what she's up to sort of thing by seeing online social media stuff, and was really, really thrilled to see when she was having her first book published. So we talk about that in this interview. We talk about her journey to writing the book, to moving kind of from theatre, which is both of our backgrounds, what we studied, into literature and her creative practice, and just loads of brilliant stuff. So I'm really looking forward to you listening to this interview, and I hope you get a lot from it, whatever artistic medium or mediums you practice in. Before we dive in, there are some things I want to tell you about, and let's make sure I remember those. So I have a workshop coming up. If you are listening to this in real time, it's coming up on Wednesday the 24th of April. It's a 1-hour workshop, and it's all about a seasonal approach to creativity and artistic practice. So if you've enjoyed some of my episodes where I've talked a little bit about holistic seasonal wisdom and approaches to things, then you're really going to get a lot from this workshop. This is a topic that I've been exploring personally for years, over 5 years, bringing kind of seasonal and cyclical wisdom to my work and my life. It's a topic I love exploring with one-to-one clients, and actually the idea to host this workshop came out of a session with a one-to-one client where we were talking about bringing different seasonal approaches to a project that she was developing. And seasonal tools are wonderful to support our well-being as we move through our work. They're amazing for everybody, in my opinion, but definitely for those of us who feel like we can't fit and force ourselves into those boxes of how we should do things that society presents to us. So if you're at all interested in alternative ways of kind of planning your time, thinking about creativity, thinking about cycles of creativity and how you do your work, then I would love for you to come along. It's £11. It's going to be an amazing, amazing value. And you'll get the replay if you can't come live. So yeah, if you're interested, there's really no reason not to sign up. Even if you can't join us live, you'll get the replay. So there's that. Then on Friday, the 27th of April, we have got the next installment of the Rebellious Artists and Creatives Cafe, which is a free kind of, I don't want to say networking, that's not the right word. It's just got those cafe vibes. It's an online space that I run on Zoom on a Friday, 12 p.m. till 12:45. So just kind of over lunchtime-ish, and that's British time. Artists and creatives of all different disciplines come along. It's wonderful. We've been international several times. We have a sort of discussion theme to guide where our discussion flows, and then we just see what happens and see where it flows. I have never left one of these sessions not feeling inspired or joyful, and just like a real lovely sense of connection. So if you're craving any of that, I would love for you to come along. The theme for this month is actually inspiration, which is perfectly fitting for this interview with Toots as well. We do talk a lot about inspiration. So you can head to the link that I'll put in the show notes and book your free space for that one. That one isn't recorded just because of the nature of the sessions. It's quite personal what we share and things like that sometimes. So I keep that contained within the time that we're together. What else? The only other thing I think that I wanted to share today is coaching. I do have spaces for new one-to-one coaching clients. So if that's something that you have been feeling curious about and been interested in checking out, then have a look at the info. I'll pop the link in the show notes. Contact me, book a free curiosity call. We can just have a chat and see if it's right for you and go from there. All right, I'm going to leave you now with this wonderful interview. I hope you enjoy. Let me know what kind of resonates in it for you. You can find me on Instagram at Ellen Franklin Carr. You can send me an email, hello@ellenfranklincarr.com. And yeah, I'll be back again soon. Hello, Toots. A very warm welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to talk with you. Would you like to start just by giving a little introduction to yourself and your work?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. So my name is Toots for short. So everyone knows me as Toots. And I've just got a book come out. So my book, All the Women She Knows, came out 6 or 7 weeks ago now. And it's a collection of short stories. And I've been on the roller coaster of post-publication in the last few weeks.
Yeah. What's that been like? Has it been like really intense?
It's been really fun, and there's just so much to be learning all the time about it. Like, I think there's something with writing, you're just in such a bubble for such a such a long time that it's just you and the voices in your head. And obviously, like, you're still kind of being sociable and stuff, but not in the same way. So to have spent a year like creating something and then for it to be like in everyone's hands, and it's really interesting. Like, it's a really interesting process.
And what's the sense of that? And like, already I'm deviating from my plan of what I thought I might ask you first, but like,
which is always a good thing.
Yeah. So we've both got a theatre background, and we'll talk a bit more about your journey kind of into kind of literature and sort of different creative mediums in a bit. But what I'm interested in is, like, obviously when you're making a piece of theatre, there's that awareness that the audience is part of the creative process, but you kind of get to see that happening often. It's like you see that. Whereas with the book, it's like, okay, I'm sending it out now, and obviously the reader is still part of creating that, but you don't necessarily get as much sense of how that's going. What is that
absolutely.
Like?
It's, do you know what? It's because, yeah, it's a really strange sensation. But I got some really good advice. So just before the book came out, I was trying to like chat to other writers I know that have got books out, just to get, you know, just any like insights. And someone said to me, like, the nice thing about having a book out is it doesn't have a sell by date. And that motion of, you know, you send the book out to people and then you don't hear anything for ages is initially daunting. But it also means that you just like randomly will get like a text message or like a post or something. And I have actually, like, learning to embrace that has been really nice and really interesting, because you're obviously with theatre. And also with theatre, you're reading the room, because our backgrounds are like not just writing and directing, but performing. And you know, when you're in front of an audience, you're like, oh, shit, I've lost them. Or, okay, they like this bit, we can keep moving. And you're playing around with the pace. So having to be like completely confident in what you're giving people, and then being able to step back and go like, okay, whatever will be right now, is really interesting. Especially because the kind of theatre I did was like comedy, like most, not like it contained a lot of comedy, even though there were dark themes. So I was such a one for, like, if I was performing, I could be like, okay, cool, they like this, we can keep running with this, we can keep going with this. But you don't get to do that with an act of literature, so it has to be there. So yeah, that has been really, really interesting. And like, and even the concept of like getting it out, like when you're promoting a show, like you're getting everyone into like a specific set of 3 weeks, but like now having something that just exists in the world, very interesting.
Yeah, really an act of like practicing letting go and trusting, whilst also not like stopping talking about it, or
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah,
and also like, people reading is such a abstract thing, I think. Like, you know, you go to the theatre and you watch a show and you're there for 2 hours and you maybe go for a drink afterwards and have a debrief, and you might do like a tweet or like whatever about it, and it's probably contained someone famous and you want to talk about that person. But with a book, we don't necessarily go through those motions. Like, it could be sitting on your coffee table for 6 months, do you know what I mean? And you pick it up in an hour, you read it in private and then you forget about it. It's an interesting thing. Like, it's totally different in terms of trying to gauge my audience.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Like, I'm always reading like 6 books or something at a time, you know, like
same.
yeah, different ones for different moods or different times of day or whatever. And like, and then there's those books that kind of stay on your shelf for years and years that you maybe have read, but like you come back to parts of them, or kind of just seeing them reminds you of the book and takes you back into the world. Like, it's a longer relationship, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And you pass books on, like you might recommend a play.
Yeah.
You give books on to people, and that's like something very interesting.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Whole different world.
yeah. Okay, let's go back to where I was going to start with. I won't deviate from my plan too much, although I could. I just want to talk about your book, and like, first of all, for you, I guess the process, so we've touched on it a bit, that kind of the idea of in the launch, but what about the process of writing it for you? It was your first book. You've obviously written short stories, kind of standalone pieces before for kind of various publications, but this was your first collection of short stories. And what was that like?
Oh, it was lovely. It was such a lovely, joyful, creative process. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. And it was actually like a relief that I enjoyed it, because I've like dipped into so many different like artistic processes over the years. And I felt really at home in the writing of it. And I felt at home in the women that I was writing. Like, before I had this outline ages ago, right at the start, but I even thought, like I've forgotten existed now. It was an outline of like what I thought the book was going to be about. And obviously it's not that at all.
Yeah.
But like half of those, like half, pretty much all of it actually never made it in. But I just had this drive. I just really wanted to write these women. And I had like, there was a bit more to start with. I mean, across the book, there's so many women characters in it. Like, there's the sort of central characters, and then there's their mums and their mates, and all those people that pop in. And I think just spending time with them for a year was really lovely. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, it was a really good time. And like, it was not to say it wasn't challenging and hard and sad at times as well, especially with like some of the characters' trajectories. But yeah, I really loved it. Like, it was a joyful, creative process.
Let's talk about that. So you've come to like, so I've written pleasure in capital letters on my notes of things I want to talk to you about. And we connected a bit because I wrote a Substack about the tortured artist myth, which I'll link to in the show notes if anyone's not read that. But like, I just think that there's all things, sorts of things wrong with that myth. And like, so it's just lovely to hear you talking about it being a joyful process, because I think so many times what has been the norm to hear has been like, it's such a torturous process to write and like or create anything, and like, it's awful. And you strike me as someone, and this is just from like your Instagram, who's really good at pleasure.
And I am good at pleasure. Pleasure's really important to me. I think it's really, I think we live like fundamentally privileged experiences, and to waste that would be a shame. And I know that that is potentially controversial, and it doesn't mean that I'm not, trust me, like I'm very like in tune with everything about the world and the creative life. And also, like, I think part of the tortured artist thing comes from the fact that artists don't tend to have a lot of money, and they tend to be writing like horrible hours, and you know, and that is really, really hard, and it can really bring you down. But I'm more interested in like, okay, cool, so how do we change that system? Like, what is creating that sense of torture, and like, how can we be looking at that instead? Because there's writing trauma, I mean, which obviously is like, that is a whole other discussion, and like one that you're like way like more qualified to discuss. But I think, like, I know that when I was writing the elements of the book that are traumatic for me, I had to really make sure that I was ready to write that, because when you're still in something, to effectively step back and create about it, I think is pretty much impossible. I think to be able to see it with any kind of critical lens, to be able to ask yourself, like, why am I saying this? What am I saying that's new? Who am I saying this for? You have to be at a very healed point in your journey before doing that. And I think there's something very exploitative about the arts industry sometimes, that we ask people to trauma hoard and then their trauma in audiences. And like, I think discussing, I mean, obviously, like, darker aspects do come into the book because they have to, because they're about, it's about women. And like, I'm not going to gloss over the female experience, but for me, I was really interested in writing women at particular points in their journey. So not necessarily like in the middle of the storm, but who are in the aftermath and who we can be in that moment.
So many important things that you just touched on. And like, I think that point that you say about, you know, writing trauma and creating from trauma, like, the truth is that so much art is made from trauma, does come from a place of trauma. And like, I don't think there's any problem with that. I think there's a difference between creating to heal yourself, and I don't think that should ever go in front of an audience, or like, unless it's people that you're really trusting or whatever. But, you know, I talk with clients about this often, like, it's making sure that you have, like you said, sufficiently healed in yourself and integrated it within yourself to be able to then create something that is not just for you and is not just for your healing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like,
gonna go out. Yeah. Go on.
Like totally. And I think that requires being strict with yourself as well, and it being like, and again I think you have to be in a good place in order to do that, because also, if you're not in a good place when you're writing it, you're going to be in an even worse place when you're handing it to people and you're wanting them to like love this thing that you made. And I think being strict with yourself about, you know, I think as well, like, something I really like about the book is that nothing really happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of plot. It is basically just women doing things. Like, it's women going to cafe with their mum. And like, and that was something I really enjoyed, because I think, and something that kind of liberated me from the theatre background, which is so like plot driven. Not all theatre, but like mainstream theatre, please, is very plot driven. And and that kind of, something has to happen, and then this has to happen. And if it's not that, it's themed as something very abstract. But I think with the short story form, you're allowed to kind of push those boundaries a little bit, and you can effectively have a book where nothing much happens, but also a lot happens, because our lives are happening all the time, and that's kind of what they look like. Like, I'm not walking along the street and something really dramatic is happening to me, but in fact, things are happening.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was thinking. And you kind of meet all of your characters at sort of a transformational point internally, I guess, is something that I sort of felt, you know. So the stuff that happens is more, internal. And maybe, you know, so I said to you, and I messaged you after I'd read the book, and I was saying to you before we hit record that I don't often like short stories. And actually, maybe that's why. Like, maybe people try and make too much happen in the ones that I don't necessarily like. And I like the ones where nothing really happens and we just get a bit of life. Because everything happens inside. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think so much of, like, I'm a really observational person. Like, I love to just kind of watch the world go by. Like, I've always been that kind of person. Like, I'm a people watcher, and I'm always interested in how people kind of move through the world. And like, those details of our lives, I just think are so beautiful, that it was a real privilege to be able to write them down. Do you know what I mean? And go, like, I think this is what makes me tick. I think this is how people move through their lives. And also, I think people, like, we've got such a like chronic problem of like self-hate and imposter syndrome, people just feeling like they're not interesting enough. And it's like, you are, like, your life is interesting. The world you live in is interesting. Like, the family you've created is interesting. And I think people are always like justifying themselves, like, oh, it's not as cool as what you do. And like, nothing really happens. And I kind of wanted to kind of write something that was my love of the ordinary, basically, like ordinary women movie. Well,
I love that. Did you like, as part of the writing process then, did you go out and about and watch people and take notes, and kind of, was that part of it, or did you already have
I'm
that?
Very, very, very lucky in that my day job is in a hair salon. Mm-hmm. So I am constantly chatting to people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then in theatre as well, like my before times, again, you're like constantly meeting people in just such like big volumes. Do you know what I mean? Like you know that as well. Like you just meet a whole new team of people every single time you do something. So I've always been someone who is around just a lot of people. And I've been able to like take my time with that. And then I did do quite a lot of people watching. Like I would go and sit in museums and galleries and stuff and just kind of watch the world go by and like notice. Like, you know, it's like random things that you notice, right? Like, this is so niche, but like, I've noticed that when someone loves the color purple, like, as in literally the color purple, not the novel, but like, like, color purple, they wear everything they'll wear is purple. Like, they'll have like purple socks, purple shoes. And I've not written anywhere, like, just like those, like, interesting quirks. And I was just like, oh my God, I swear that is always the case.
That's so funny. I was going to give you a little tidbit about the colour purple. It's just that there used to be a house near me that clearly the owner loved the colour purple, and the whole house was painted purple. So the whole front of the house, the car was purple, the gate outside was purple.
Right?
And then if you ever saw them, they were wearing all purple and they had purple hair.
Yeah, like it's what is it? Like, what is the stronghold of purple? I'm fascinated by that section. But like, yeah, I think allowing myself to kind of sit in the world and go slowly and actually just really observe was definitely part of the process of why it was so joyful for me, because I think for the first time I had like a meaty creative project, one which was huge for me, and also one where I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do this frantically. I'm not going to wear my devising theatre hat. I'm just going to like chill the fuck out and like see what happens. And that was really like, honestly, like a real change for me and something I really enjoyed. And it's definitely like changed me as a person. 100%. Like I've felt a real change in pace in myself that I've really enjoyed.
Tell me more about that. I want to go deeper in that. So we touched a little bit when we were talking before we recorded about burnout and stuff. And that's just like, it's huge. It's huge in society in general. And I think it's huge in the creative industries as well. And I think, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe especially when you're making live stuff. So like, you know, theatre tends to work to tight time frames, and you know, so do films and TV, and that's inaccessible for all sorts of reasons. I think there's an issue in literature as well. I certainly hear that from writers that I work with who are like disabled and kind of feel they can't go
absolutely
at the quote unquote norm. So it's just lovely to hear you talking about like giving yourself that permission to do it slowly and how that changed you. So can you just tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess it kind of, in terms of working backwards, so in 2019, I was so burnt out. Like, I was so burnt out. I think, like, I was just, yeah, things were just, I was just burnt out. Like, the kind of struggle to be making theatre, we were sort of started, I was working on, like, a short film. There was just loads going on, and it was too much, and I was spread too thinly, and I think there's a problem with theatre that before you even get in the room, often, I mean, I'm sure this definitely happens in literature as well, I mean, this is definitely just like a change in me, but like, you know, when you're thinking about the outcome from the start, like you're thinking about the success rate from the start.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, like, because also even the language of theatre, like box office split triggering,
yeah.
And like immediately you're thinking like, what am I going to lose in this process? And I think that's a really, like, dangerous. It's kind of like being an armadillo. Like, you're constantly, like, behind your armour in the theatre industry. You're always preparing to, like, make a financial loss. You're always waiting for, like, a shitty review. Everyone talks to each other. Like, there's not a lot of, like, peace in that process. And it wasn't just theatre. It was just, like, life generally. And I think that, like, I think I was reaching that moment as well where I was like about to turn 30, and cliched as it is, those like milestone moments do make you think a little bit about like, where am I at and like, what do I want to be doing? And I was like literally at the end of 2019. So then when COVID happened, it actually, even though COVID brought with it a whole host of other anxieties and terror, but it did give me space to step back and just go, hang on, like theatre is proving itself to be really lacking in elasticity to kind of come back from this. So, and actually, even if it does come back, like, do I want to be part of it? And the truth is, I love theatre and I will always love theatre. I love what we can do. Like, I saw some amazing theatre last night. Like, I love it. But I think the structures in which it has been working really need to be not just questioned. Like, we are so past the point of questioning it. Like, things need to be overhauled and changed and looked at. And this isn't me necessarily saying that, so I was burnt out and I was questioning and I was thinking about everything and I was thinking about myself and the point that I was at in my own life. And yeah, I just wrote. Like, I just wrote and wrote and wrote, and like it was all just kind of pouring out of me. And I got into journaling, but I got like, I invested so much more time in my poetry. And like you said, I'd always been writing bits and pieces here and there. Always, always, always have been for as long as I can remember. And I've always had like bits and pieces in magazines, but it's never been something that I've been able to really sit down and commit to. And I think that I suddenly just had this thought where, like, I think the imposter syndrome actually just left my body, where I was like, no, you should be writing something, like, you should be writing a body of work. And that confidence did come from theatre, because I've got like scripts and stuff that I've written, and I've got things that have been like long listed for awards and whatever. And like, so that, you know, that was giving me that confidence as well. So, you know, I wouldn't be where I am without the theatre industry either. But I just experienced this change in what I wanted to do creatively. And COVID actually meant that we had time in our houses to sit down and go, hang on, where do I want to play and where do I want to go? And like, what do I want to create? Like, I did a course in like Victorian cinema, like totally random, but like really lovely to just do something totally different. It's just like,
yeah, it can be really amazing as well to go outside of your art form, can't it? Like, I work a lot with a lot of visual artists, or I have been over the past few years, like as an access support worker and as a coach. And it's like amazing because that's not my art form at all. And I find it so inspiring to hear them talking about their work and their ideas. And like that in turn inspires my own ideas and stuff.
Yeah, I really relate to that, definitely.
You also, I think, this is again from me like observing you on Instagram, like you seem really good at like taking yourself on like what people might call those artist dates, you know, like going out and...
Oh yeah, that is like my... That is... I love that. I'm glad that comes across. Yeah, I think that's really important to me. Like, it's it has to be done, because I find that, so I'm just like, I can't be, I'm a bit of a like wild creature. Like, I can't be inside for too long. I need to get outside. And like, I love to write in, actually though, with the book, I did actually do a lot of writing at home, because I was reading so much of it aloud all the time. So you can't ruin everyone's day, but like, I love to be in situ somewhere where I can get up and like walk around, go and look at the exhibition and come back. And it doesn't necessarily even have to be something that I love, or that's really important to me, and it's such a part of my process. And I think that, because I don't think art happens in a vacuum. I think you're very hard pushed to find someone who only reads books or only goes to art exhibitions or only does a particular thing. I think, you know, and we're so, again, like that privileged thing. Like, I live in London. I've got access to so much of that. It's kind of important to me to kind of be holding on to that. Because actually something I found really, really hard about the panna cotta was like the pandemic.
I love that.
Something I found hard about the panorama, I just find the word, yeah, the P word's too hard. Mm-hmm. But like, I realized how much inspiration is important to me. Like, when I'm lacking in inspiration, I really struggle. Like, I really, that is when I will find myself at my lowest. And also from people as well, like from friendships and relationships and stuff. Like the moment at which someone sort of stops inspiring me is where they've lost me. And I know that sounds like quite hard.
Like, bye.
but it's true. Like, I love being around. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm only around creatives. I'm around all sorts of people. But, and also, again, different things inspire me. Like, you know, some of my friends who, like, I think they regard themselves of having lost their inspirational qualities because, you know, like, they're like, a few of my friends are like fresh with babies at the moment. So they're in like full mum mode.
Yeah.
And I think they keep being like, oh, like all the exciting things I used to do. And I'm like, and like they inspired me before, but this new version of them inspires me too in like a totally different way, like those evolutions that people go through. So yeah, so I had to work hard to stay inspired during Rona. So I did do like a million courses. Like, did so much stuff. And it was like, yeah, it was good for me. Like, Rona wasn't good for anyone, but like that kind of being,
you know, right,
being able to think was good. And I think that kind of meant that on the other side of it, I was able to look at myself and go, you know what, like, you did well to make some good things come of that situation. Like, you did well to kind of maintain focus. And, like, that was quite good for me.
Yeah, and to kind of, like, you know, find this new creative path. I'm going to use the word path.
Yeah, but, definitely.
You know, you're so right about the inspiration. Like, I had a similar experience during that time where I remember going to my mum and stepdad live in Cornwall now, which is miles away from everywhere. So I remember we were driving down there, we're going to see them. It was the first time we were able to go and see them. So it must have been like 2021, I guess. And I remember being at the service station. There's this really nice service station. I can't believe I'm talking about a service station on this podcast, but like it's a really nice service station called Gloucester Services. Don't know if you've ever been, but
okay,
completely different to any other service station. It's all like local produce and stuff, and they've got like grass on the roof and they've got like a duck pond. So it's like nice. And I remember being there, and it was the first time I think that I'd been surrounded by that many people. There weren't even loads of people there, but like, and suddenly I was getting loads of ideas. Like, I was just seeing this woman, and I was like, oh, I was like making a story about her life. And I was like, I haven't felt this sense of creative inspiration in like a really long time. And that, like, having that coming back made me realize that I kind of lost it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hadn't been around life.
Yeah. Well, also, I think that it set us the challenge of, like, that is, like, I'm sure, I mean, I wrote, like, honestly, a gazillion, but, like, there must be, like, countless poems and short stories and plays, like, written about, like, the trees and people's gardens.
Yeah.
Because we were on our knees looking, and I love that stuff anyway, like, I've always
written. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that kind of, because it set the challenge of, like, well, you can't go here at the moment, so where are you going to, what are you going to use to inspire you? And I think that that moment where everyone had to like stop and look did mean that people suddenly tuned in. Like, I think something really good post-Rona has been that people are a lot more on the side of nature and getting out and going for walks and stuff. Like, I live in an area which has quite a low like economic standard, is that right? Where everyone, like, people aren't particularly rich in this area, basically.
Yeah.
People don't have gardens. And so going to the park, which was a park that I've gone to on my walks, living my like freelancer life that I can pop to in the afternoon, which is almost always like no one there. But all of a sudden seeing people that were like furloughed and out in the park with their kids for the first time, that was really special because these people are like literally like for the first time, like able to actually hang out. Do you know what I mean? Because they're not... Mm. And kind of coming off of that like working wheel is challenging and scary, and financially, like, everyone was massively impacted, and like, you know, all of that stuff is true. But there were also flashes of moments where it was like, but also we're in the park, and that's quite a significant thing for someone that like is working 7 days a week, all hours that God sends. Do you know what I mean? There was something about watching that unfold.
Yeah. And that speaks to that, like, you know, the slowing down that you were talking about with the writing of your book. And it was a real opportunity, I think, for like a real overhaul of how we did work. And I know some people now, a lot of people have changed where they're only working some time in the office and some time from home, but it feels like not as much has changed as I was hoping, you know, with regards to slowing down and our relationship to work and things.
Well, that is where the book comes in, because then for me, yeah, because I noticed that too. So when I was starting to think about how do you change in yourself regardless of what's happening in the world around you, and that was where the book started coming. So I was like, okay, like the world is always the world, life will always life, but who are you? Like, how are you aligned? How are you grounded? And I think that was when I then found myself able to write these characters, because they're fundamentally like all women who, like they if they don't already know themselves, they're really on the path to getting to know themselves. And I think that is the magic. I think that's the alchemy that helps us survive, kind of thing. Because how else do you set boundaries unless you really know what you want and what you really need? So that was kind of how I came into it. Because, yeah, because the world does go back to normal. And, you know, and it's like, and also life is really hard. And there is so much, like, you know, like before you used to talk to, like, adults, I said it's like I'm not faithful. You know, like when it's like older people, they'd be like, "Oh, but it's so easy." They don't anymore. Now they're like, "Now your generation is actually fucked."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like there's so many reasons longer than we've got time to get into now. But it's like, yeah, like noticing that and being like, okay, like everything that needs to be changed in the world is a lot, and that has to happen, and you know, we can strive to make that happen. But who are you? Like, what? Like, who? Like, you know, you're the only person who goes to bed with you each night. Like, who are you? And like, and I think for me, I was really interested in that, like, self-discovery and connection. And I'm someone who I really think everything is about interpersonal relations anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I think who we are in relation to each other is so important. And I think there's something so cherished about that, and I think people forget about that. Like, people find it easier to go on Instagram and rant and share like a million clips and posts about stuff than they do to actually message their mate and check in and say like, how are you, or like message their mate and say, I'm not okay. And I think that kind of that like lack of, there's just something lacking in people. I think I wanted to write about not lacking. What possibility does connection give us, whether it's connection to self or connection to others?
And do you feel like in order to write the book, you had to really answer that question for yourself first of who are you? Or do you feel like the book helped you answer that? Do you feel like you've always known who you are?
No one always
knows. No, yeah.
I think that it's a little bit of everything, because I think to rewind, we do know who we are, but I think we deviate from that sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm a big believer in like the loss of being a child and how much
this
is things. Yes, I think that, you know, like for example with the writing, I was always writing as a child, I was always imagining, I was always
right
the kind of like coming back into that was like, no, this actually is who you are. Like, this isn't a new path, this is what you've always done, and this is what you've always used to move through the world. Like, I've always written, like I've got like I've got so many notebooks and so many diaries and so many journals, and it's always been just part of my practice for survival. And like, actually during COVID, me and Isabella, who you also know, we set up like a weekly writing Zoom where we'd stretch and we'd write for just an hour, and it was a very like anchoring. So I think realizing, so I learned a lot about myself through the book without a doubt, but I would never have written any of it unless, because the thing about having a book I've learned is it's kind of like calling me to account. Like, it's like you've written this, so you've got to like, I feel like maybe not every book, because obviously people write like fantasy and stuff, but like with this particular kind of thing, because it's about, it's because it's so specifically about women's journey, it was so important that, you know, like I wrote about, like for example, the stuff that's about body image, I wouldn't have been able to write that stuff 10 years ago. It would have been very, very disingenuous, because I had not reached any level of body acceptance
at all.
So I wouldn't have even touched that. I would have written about how, I mean, I've done work about how I'm struggling with my body image at the time that I was struggling with it, to circle back to that kind of trauma theatre conversation, like why that wasn't massively sensible in the end. But like, yeah, so it's kind of, I wouldn't have written anything that I wouldn't be able to say, no, like, actually, I do stand by that. So yeah, I had to be ready to write the stories. And then the stuff I learned about myself was, I learned a lot about just like my creative practice and the pace that I like to be at. And just like who I want to be around and like the kind of women that I feel really deserve to be spotlighted that aren't. And it made me question what, I think work, so many people make work that's really, really overtly political and overtly discussing social issues. And I think that is powerful and exciting and brave, and like I love like watching that work, but it's not the work that, it's not the way that I approach those things. So for me, I think that the political is super personal, and so like there are moments in the book that for me were just touching on that, and like, you know, things like just referencing like doctor's appointments and like, are they able to get them, and are the doctors supportive? Actually, are they really unhelpful, and like opinions of older generations and opinions of younger generations. And yeah, like there's a couple moments in the book where I was like able to kind of, in my mind at least, kind of give indications of what I think societally is coming at women at different angles all the time without writing anything that feels like you're being told. Because I think joy of reading is like being on the journey too. And I think something I've really enjoyed about that is like it's now your turn to imagine like what do they even look like? Who are they? What do they, how they move through the world, kind of thing.
Yeah. And you shared quite a lot from your own culture in the book as well, didn't you? So there's kind of that element, not only your own culture, but lots of different cultures and lots of non-white characters, which is great.
Yeah. And exactly, that was like really important to me, because with my theatre hat on, I always had this idea about writing like a note at the start about like when you cast these women in your mind, they are X, Y, Z. And then I really got to a stage, I was like, or I can just trust that that's going to come across. Do you know what I mean? And also I never wanted to be too prescriptive, because I want people to feel free to see themselves in the text, because I think that's really liberating. And for me, it was really important to feature my Cypriotness, because I've never read that. Like, I've just never seen it anywhere. And when I have seen it, it's been in ways that hasn't felt real to me. And like, I think, you know, whenever anyone is making an artistic product, I think it's really important that you remember that like no one represents everyone. Like,
yeah.
You only be coming from your own position really and truly. And I think that it was really important to me to do that and to take the time to, just in small ways, like just take them to Cyprus, because Cyprus is important to me. So why not have Cyprus in the book? And I think that was really, yeah, like that, I'm thinking about that and like cultures and how I wanted to present them was, and generations as well. Like I was so having women of different ages and having paternal relationships and maternal relationships and all of that different stuff, like, was really important to me.
Something else I just have to mention is the trigger warnings. That you put trigger warnings at the beginning, which I've only ever seen in fantasy books before.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. There's something about when you stumble across something triggering in literature, which for me at least is actually harder than when I'm seeing it like in a film or theatre. I think because my imagination is so active, I see the most heaviest version of reading, and I really don't want anyone to feel forced to experience something that they don't want to, they're not ready to. And also at the same time, I think it also allows people to go like, actually, I'd love to read something about my experience. So then, you know,
or to go, oh, okay, I'm working through that at the moment, so I'm going to come back to that story.
Yeah.
You know, like when I feel ready. So yeah, I just love that. So you mentioned a little bit about you know, learning about your creative process and also the stretching and writing that you used to run. And I've sort of seen you mention a few times about kind of yoga and walking. And so I'd love to hear more about your creative process and how movement is a part of that for you.
Yeah, 100%. I love movement. I love movement. And again, this is something that kind of speaks to like an evolution in me, because I was like a chubby little girl, and I still am a chubby little girl, but I used to be very, very self-conscious doing any kind of sport, any kind of movement, and I hated it, and I associated it with being bad at something.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quite comfortable with being bad at things. I think something that I feel really sad about, like in a child lost, is that we just used to do shit whether or not we were good at it. Like you just crap with a pipe cleaner and your mum would be like, oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
And I think that is, I think creativity for the sake of creativity is life saving. And I think people should, I don't think we always have time to do it. But I found that with sport and PE and all of that stuff, it wasn't just that I was bad at it, it was that I was being like ridiculed.
Awful.
Yeah, it's that. Yeah, exactly. And like, so most people have that experience. But then, and then I just think this last sort of however many, I don't know, I just got into yoga at some point years ago and then just developed it into my practice. And I found that, like, actually, for me, the relationship between using my head has to be in equal sort of parallel to how I'm using my body. So like I go for so many walks whilst I'm, especially at the start of the process, like I would go for really long walks for people. I live like near a quite good park, woods, lake situation. I love bodies of water as well. I find anything like that very calming. So being able to do that and like physically shake the material out of me is really important. And one of the other reasons why I was working at home was because I would just stop and like smash out some music and just like run around the room and like do some dancing, because I think that's where you can get like really trapped in your body. And there's all that stuff as well, isn't there, around like if you're, again, especially on days where I was writing stuff that was harder, even if like the story as a final product isn't hard, like there were moments in there that were difficult to portray, especially because I was thinking about how do I want to portray this. Like, you know, like you tighten up and you carry on, you know, we carry all that trauma in like our pelvis and wherever, like so all of that stuff was really important to me and really integral. And like I just love movement. I just think there's so much to be said for just being able to move your body without the pressure of doing this because I want to lose weight, or I'm doing this because I want to have a bigger bum, but just doing it because it feels nice and kind of getting into that somatic space is really important to me.
Yeah, completely agree. I do so much writing when walking, like through voice note apps that
I love that. That's
good. That like transcribe what I'm saying very, very badly, but like I get the gist and it's fine. So I feel exactly the same. And I need lots of space to be weird when I'm working. That's like dance around and stuff. Yeah. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to just get to is when you did an Instagram takeover on Dear Damsel's Instagram account. So Dear Damsel's are the publishers of your book and they also run a fortnightly writing club, which is great. I'll put the link actually to that in the show notes if people want to join. But you did this takeover of their Instagram for Galentine's Day. And I remember there was a question that you were asked. I think it was around like your ambition or like what's next or something. And you shared something about like your ambition being to be creatively fulfilled.
Yeah.
And I loved that. Can you talk about that?
So the question was, is there like a particular, like, I think it was something along the lines of, is there like a particular career milestone that I want to get? And the answer is no. Like, there are many things that I would love to do, many, many things. And there are many, like for example, like I was sitting at a book launch 2 years ago and I was sitting there and I was like, I'd like to be doing that. Like, I'd like to be on the other side. But there are so many things that I could say that for. Like, like I've got plays written in my drawer that I would love to come to fruition. I've got ideas for films. I've got more short stories. Like, there isn't any one particular thing. And I think being an artist for some people is about being like really rigid and like the end goal is this, and I need it to be seen by this venue and this da da da. Whereas with me, it's like there are so many things that I would love to do that I'm happy and most comfortable letting the path be the path. Do you know what I mean? And I think for me, the most important thing is for me to be fulfilled in what is coming out from me all the time. I don't want to deviate and like do something for the sake of doing it, because that's what success looks like. Because it's not about what success looks like, it's about what success feels like. And I think for me, you know, like this is a, like an independently run project, like they're an indie publisher. It's not like a mass scale thing, but there is something so fulfilling about getting it in people's hands and people relating and enjoying or asking me questions about it. And it doesn't matter to me that the it doesn't matter to me what everyone else's version of success looks like. And I think that that is something that you kind of have to develop as a working artist or creative, because the reality is like you're probably working like I'm still like I'm a day job, like you're probably working like 1, 2, 3 jobs at the same time. Like you're probably stretched, you're probably experiencing like a lot that's pulling you in different directions. So if you don't love what you do and you don't feel fulfilled by it, then genuinely I don't know why you'd do it, because it's so incredibly difficult. And I think for me it's just that like I would love, so there just isn't any, there are so many things, but also that I would love to happen. If they don't happen, I'm not going to feel gutted. Do you know what I mean? But I think, again, it's that thing of kind of creating situations where you might fail, I think is always dangerous. Like, I think taking leaps is really, really important. But I've seen so many people say, like, unless this show gets seen by this person or reviewed by this reviewer, or unless I get a book deal with this publishers, it's not going to be good enough. It's not going to be what I want. I think that, A, managing expectations is important. And B, like, ask yourself why, but why? Because it looks great to everyone else or because it feels great for me?
Yeah. I think
I was just gonna say, like, I think for me, like, so I started running like writing workshops and stuff kind of started many years ago, and then we kind of got deeper into it. There's something about discovering purpose, which I think is very fulfilling and very important, and something that I didn't realize that I was kind of still trying to do until it found me, kind of thing.
I was just going to say there's something I think really dangerous about connecting our self-worth to, well, our work in general, I think, and to those big goals of like, you know, okay, yeah, it's got to be published by this person or seen by this. And when we connect our self-worth to that, which is what we're taught to do, it's really dangerous.
100%. Like, I just wanted to tell stories and here I am telling stories. So like, that's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I just think it can get people into a real slump and can make people kind of just lose sight of how amazing they are. Like, there's so many amazing artists that are like incredibly hard on themselves because they haven't got XYZ. And I think that you've made something beautiful, like having faith in where that might take you does feel nuts, but like you kind of got to be quite nuts to be doing any of this stuff. You kind of have to embrace the weird and embrace the uncertainty.
Completely.
I've always been quite good with uncertainty. Like, I've always been quite good at coping with that. Like, obviously there's times where suddenly I'll be like, I need an answer now, and then have to step back and be like, no, be patient, trust the process. Does the process know I'm trusting it? Like, all of that stuff. And I think there's something to be said for loving the journey, because just before I got the book deal sounds very serious and hilarious, but just before that I had got, oh man, such a lot of rejections. Like, I had been rejected from like literally everything, like everything. And I was really like loving what I was making, and enjoying making it. And I was like really serious with myself that I was like, you have to love this process, because if you're only gonna base how you feel on the outcome, like, you're basically fucked. Because yeah. like, you're only getting rejections at the moment. And also, that's really important to me, to like, something I've been really conscious of in interviews and stuff is like saying, like, I had loads of rejections, I'm still at my day job, I'm gonna be at my day job for the foreseeable, because I think it's important to be honest about that. Because I remember going mm-hmm. to art schools and people acting like it all just happened like that, and it's not, it's not like that. Like, that's not how anything works. And also, just as a final thing as well, is that I think it's absolutely like unhinged that we ask 18-year-olds to decide what they want to do.
Oh yeah, my god, it's insane.
Like, it's come on.
I really like the model. I was on a road trip in the States, and I visited Harvard and Yale and like did a tour, and like, so it was a tour with a student, and they were talking about like how it works over there. And like, obviously eventually you have to choose your major, but and I don't know if this is the case at every American college, so if there's Americans listening, I'm sorry if I'm getting this wrong, but like, you can basically choose. So like, we could have been studying like English and drama, but we could also like take a course in astrophysics if we wanted.
Yeah.
And like that kind of thing. And like, you just get to diversify and like learn from all these different things that fulfill your curiosity, or like, you know, yeah. just led
and
to
also
it.
Like, also like, I'm not like, I was quite a bright like 18-year-old, but you don't also know all of the jobs that are out there. Like, you don't know all the
possibilities. No. Like, yeah, of course not.
All of the stuff that you could be studying. So you're coming from quite like a narrow
yeah. pool,
like, and also like, you know, depending on your social and ethnic background, like, you know, like, there are definitely like a million cultures where they would like theatre doesn't really exist in like Cypriot cultures kind of thing. Like, it happens, but it's not like a daily thing. Yeah. And it's a kind of like dipping into something that is very different. I mean, I do think like one thing that has been almost liberating about how like how difficult everything is that everything is suddenly difficult. Like, you know, when we were kids, there were like jobs that used to be like high earning jobs.
Like, you go and get that job and you're sorted. Like, yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't think that exists anymore, which isn't better, obviously. But no. It has allowed people to go, well, I might as well do something that I want to do. Like, pretty much everyone yeah. has at least one job now, which I just think is so.
Yeah.
Our generation, at least, like, they've got a side yeah. hustle, they've got something they're working on. Like, everyone has at least one, and like that, and I think that's really exciting, because it shows that like there's a lot of ambition in us, and like, I love ambition, I love ambitious people. But I think it's important to have ambitions that also are coupled with integrity. So for me, in terms of what I think success looks like, and that question of like, what do I want, it's more about like a feeling that I want to have in myself, and like a peace and a joy.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And then combine that ambition with the slowing down.
Yeah.
Got it. That's it.
Yeah.
That feels like a great place to start to wrap up. So what I'm going to do is ask you my new ending question that when I emailed you about, I was like, I've just thought of this question. I'm going to ask everyone at the end of the episodes. and then I'll give you space to just share about your workshops that you mentioned and like anything else that you want to tell people.
Okay, yeah.
So my new ending question is just to end this statement however you want to. So a creative life is?
Joyful. But also challenging.
Thank you. And what do you want to tell people about?
What do I want to tell people? Obviously the book, like, read
yes,
the book.
Yes, obviously. Yes, and I will link to it in the show notes as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. And then I run workshops. At the moment, they're in London, but I am really, really hoping to diversify that, because there is a whole world beyond London.
Yeah.
But for people that are in London, I lead a creative writing workshop once a month, and it's a playful afternoon where we drink cocktails or have just like a constant stream of tea and cake, and we write in like a little gallery space, and it's really fun. And it kind of accesses all of that stuff that I was saying about like inner child and being playful, like bringing toys or flowers or something, and we'll kind of use that as stimulus. I do actually have some online ones as well, so I can send you links for that. But yeah, basically, read the book. Follow me on Instagram. That's where I post. And also on Instagram, I post a lot of writing generally. Yes. If anyone's interested in reading what I come up with without committing, then that's a good place to start.
Yes, and you've got a monthly prompt for April, haven't you, for poetry? So this
I really enjoyed. So this was like a good exercise for me, because last year I tried to do it and I was like reading other publishers and other authors' prompts, and I was like, you could do this. you could do this. You don't have to wait for someone else to do this for you. I feel like that's a piece of advice I would give, is like, just don't wait. Like, if you've got the instinct that you could do it,
just do it. yeah. Good advice. All right, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. This was great. Recording. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Create Shift. I hope you found it supportive, encouraging, and inspiring. If you did, I would love it if you could take a moment to rate and review the episode and the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to the show and you are able to review it. Please share it with your creative community, your network, anybody you think who might benefit from listening to the show, enjoy it, find it supportive. Share it on your social media, share it on your email list, share it with people you actually see in person, all the ways. Anything you can do to help spread the word about the podcast helps people to find my work and is a really easy, simple, free way that you can support me and my work. And it doesn't take very long and it feels really good. So what's to lose? Until next time, have a great day, have a great evening, support yourself in whatever ways you need, and I will connect with you again soon.